Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Monkey Tennis?
Smelly Alan Fartridge.
Linton Travel Tavern seemed an obvious choice.
Monkey Tennis?
At the BBC, of all places. Be real.
Monkey Tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey Tennis?
I wish things had turned out differently, but I'm glad they didn't.
Monkey Tennis?
It will be called Alan's Show. I decided, and would be absolutely ace.
Monkey Tennis?
But needless to say, I had the last laugh.
Hello, pod fans, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
I also have a daughter whose birth invoked similar feelings.
Nick Older.
In 1967, I misdiagnosed myself with cancer of the ball bag.
And Tom Stab.
Whether you regard it as an ancient art form, a woodland hunting technique, or just a big version of darts, this is archery.
Lovely stuff. So as you should know by now, we are tackling the book, I, Partridge. We need to talk about Alan, phase by phase, and we're coming through Alan's early years. Before we get into that, I just want to remind you about our forthcoming live show. We're going to be tackling Knowing Me, Knowing Yule, and speaking to Simon Michael the Geordie Greenall live at the Prince Charles Cinema in London's Leicester Square on Wednesday, November the 22nd. If you haven't got tickets yet, you can pick them up from postpoppodcast.com/monkeytennislive. But anyway, enough about that. Let's get on. Carol.
So before we get started, over to Tom Dark to give us an update on the track listing for this chapter.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. The mandatory listening for this chapter are the songs The First Time I Ever Saw Your Face by Roberta Flack and Fernando by ABBA. It's also worth pointing out that we're dealing with Chapter 4, Carol, in the audiobook. This is two chapters, Carol and Marriage.
So it's the 13th of April, 1978. Alan and Carol Parry marry in Caister St. Edmunds. Alan is actually concerned about his wedding guests, so he's worried that there isn't disabled access at the venue, which actually is quite a nice thing for him to be thinking about. Although he does also flag that currently everyone is able-bodied, but as the wedding is some months away, there is still time for someone to be involved in a serious road traffic accident.
It's a nice little insight into Alan's mind, very warped way of thinking.
Morbid. Or developing a degenerative brain disease. So he's worried about this on a number of levels, and he's worried for other people.
I'm also a big fan of his listing the reasons that Carol and then respectively he have chosen this particular chapel. Carol likes it for its pretty graveyard, its cherry blossom and its old world charm. Alan likes it for its ample parking and easy access to Junction 5 of the A47.
So it's on the day of the wedding. Alan is up nice and early enjoying an egg medley, a term I'd not really heard before. Anyone else?
I think he's coined that term, to be honest.
Yeah.
One poached, one boiled, one baked.
A baked egg?
Apparently so.
I don't know what that would look like.
That's the joke, isn't it?
Maybe.
Is a baked egg a thing?
Yeah.
I'm not an egg eater.
You see people like the body coach or whatever. They do like baked eggs in avocados, things like that. But
madness.
Yeah.
He gets to the venue and
2 hours to spare.
Very much suffering with bum gas.
I love trailed by an almost constant stream of his own bum gas. He's
without wishing to be crude, and then probably goes on to the crudest expression for farts. My own bum gas.
He's also relieved to see that no one is disabled, so everyone can enter the venue. Thank God. One less thing to worry about. He kind of, I guess. He talks about Carol kind of and how she looks in her wedding dress, and he's attempting to say something nice. So she comes in a white dress and with a veil that he describes as looking like a translucent burqa.
He then says she really did look 1,000 dinars. The current exchange rate for 1,000 dinars makes it worth about 66 pence.
Change from a quid, Carol.
I love that he skips over the ceremony, but says it's a ceremony that he felt had been deliberately marred by the vicar's lisp.
Deliberately? As if he'd like intentionally developed up to list. So he goes on to talk about where they met, which is a cafe called Rita's in Norwich, which apparently made some of the best toast around. I mean, literally, you can't get toast wrong, can you? And Alan's going into the cafe after doing some Scottish country dancing. I'm slightly disappointed we didn't get any more insight into the Scottish country dancing. He kind of mentions it, and apart from saying that he had a really tough day, and I think he acronymizes it to, is it SCD he calls it? We don't really get any more insight in that, but actually I'd be keen to hear more.
Or see more. I'd love to see some footage of that, him flailing around.
And he was kind of very much attracted to Carol, who's obviously also in Rita's, with her glossy brown hair, which he said wouldn't look out of place on a dog show.
He also says, I love this bit, of, again, extraneous information. In her right hand, she had a cup of tea, and in her left, she didn't.
She was looking disillusioned, and Alan says, yes, the tea had that layer of scum that comes from adding the water before the milk. Question to the group. What is the perfect way of making tea? What is the best way of making tea? I think there's only one answer, but there are different versions. I want to know. Adzi.
I'd go hot water onto the tea bag. Tea bag already in the cup.
Yes.
I'd give it two squishes with a teaspoon against the side.
Yep.
Remove and place elsewhere. Enter 15 to 20 mils of milk and then stir 3 times with a teaspoon.
Adzi's nailed it. Is that the consensus around the table?
Oh,
thank God. None of you people are add the milk with the tea bag in.
Never milk first.
Be real.
Be real.
So we get the all-important confirmation, not that we needed it, that Fernando was conceived on Helvellyn.
Yep.
I guess kind of, you know, talks about life as a parent and as a father. And it all kind of sounds like it's coming from a good place. You're kind of thinking, what's the gag here?
Spends about 3 pages talking about Fernando's birth.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all good. And then you realize that at the end, he closes that by saying, I also have a daughter, Denise, whose birth invokes similar feelings.
Yep. In fact, in the book, it's written slightly differently. He says, I also have a daughter whose birth invokes similar feelings. And then you have to go to the footnote for it to say Denise.
I added Denise.
Well, I think
it might be in the audiobook.
Yeah.
It's probably in the audiobook.
Yeah.
No, because I think that destroys the joke if he does to a certain extent.
So that concludes the chapter on Carol, although don't worry, there's a lot more Carol to cover. And that takes us on to Hospital Radio. Again, Tom, coming to you for an update on the track listings.
So your mandatory listening for this chapter is Papa Joe by The Sweet.
So there's not a huge amount to cover on this, so we kind of get a brief kind of overview of Alan's kind of stint at Hospital Radio. He starts by kind of saying that one of the worst things he ever did was kick a pig, which I'm confident there's a much worse thing that he's done.
Well, he shot a man.
He did shoot someone, which he doesn't really... we'll come to his kind of...
There's a whole chapter on that.
Yeah. There's much more to talk about that.
Exactly.
I'd like to know more about the circumstances that surrounded him kicking a pig, why that happened.
So, yeah, you don't really get any detail, do you?
No. Just that it's a school trip to Heston Farm in 1964 and he maintains it was self-defence.
Brilliant. Is it also at this point that Alan declares that he was active, he had a good diet, and he was pubing well?
He talks about pubing quite a lot. That's not the first time that he's used that phrase, pubing.
I've been pubic for
31 years now.
Yeah, there's something deeply unpleasant about the word pubing and pubic, and I'm not sure why.
Particularly when Alan's using it.
And Nick.
Yeah, but I use it embarrassingly. He's confident when he says it. It doesn't work for me.
There is a really brilliant piece of description in this chapter when Alan says, "Snowflakes fell from the sky like tiny pieces of a snowman who had stood on a landmine."
Nice.
That's so good.
His early broadcast style leaves a lot to be desired as well. He turns up to work late and says, "Woo, yeah, call off the search party. I'm here. It's 1 minute past eight and this is Alan Partridge. Or should I say the late Alan Partridge? Perhaps not, because that would suggest I was dead and I'm not. But here's a list of people who are." Great tack to take there on hospital radio.
You're saying that leaves a lot to be desired. It doesn't really develop that much better, does it? Really, to be honest.
No, that's true.
It starts bad and just gets worse.
He also mentions briefly a number of singles that he's frightened to play at hospital radio for fear of offending people. Art Garfunkel's I Only Have Eyes For You, The Recently Blinded. David Essex's Hold Me Close, Burns Victims. The Stylistics Can't Give You Everything, The Terminally Ill. Tammy Wynette's Stand By Your Man, Paralyzed Women and Paralyzed Homosexual Men.
He also says that he spent 94 wonderful months at hospital radio. That's nearly 8 years doing hospital radio.
He said he was broadcasting live during the deaths of some 800 patients. Imagine Alan being the last thing you heard.
It's nearly 100 patients a year.
And then at the end of the chapter, he's talking about how he made some kind of vow to return year after year. And then he just says, "Circumstances meant that I've not been able to get back to the hospital in the intervening 31 years. In the main, that's been down to me. Work commitments have made it simply unfeasible."
Circumstances.
Yeah. He was never going to go.
The only other thing I was going to mention was Alan obviously kind of considers himself a bit of a savvy businessman, yet he, when talking to Rick Shayers, who employs him there, says, "Will I get loads of salary at the prospect of going to a new station?" It's like, yeah, no idea. No clue, Alan. I don't think there's a huge amount else on hospital radio, so moving on to local / commercial radio.
Upgrade.
Again, as always, coming to you, Tom, for an update on the track listings.
The tracks you need to listen for this chapter are Jump by Van Halen and The Theme to Ski Sunday.
Both bangers.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Should we point out as well, are these available to hear? Can people kind of listen to these on
yes.
a Spotify playlist?
We have compiled a Spotify playlist of all the mandatory track listing from iPartridge, so we will post that up on our social media accounts.
Fantastic. So Alan talks about his time at Our Price, where he contributed to their in-store radio, which didn't last very long. I assume everyone around the table does remember Our Price.
So
yes.
Fondly.
Yep. Yeah.
So the list of people that contributed to the Our Price in-store radio, some names familiar, some not. So Paul Stubbs, John Boyd, Brian Golding, who apparently had a wacky sense of humour with a genuine mental illness.
And killed himself in 1991.
Oh. Yes. And then one Phil Schofield.
Well, you might recognise that name, Philip Schofield. The detail in the book goes as follows. Phil was always the baby of the group and had a snotty nose quality that we bullied out of him. Now better known as the presenter of TV's This Morning, Phil was back then a bit of a know-it-all and was brought down a peg or two by off-air pranks such as having his shoes filled with piss.
what a prank.
And then he ends that section by just saying, "Phil, if you're reading, why not give me a call?" He's desperate to get back in touch with Philip Schofield, isn't he?
We know why Phil's not giving you a call.
Better, more successful broadcast.
So given Alan's gone into a lot of detail about his life thus far, he then goes on to say that between 1984 and 1987, nothing happened.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
This cannot be true, but is this because he doesn't know, he's hiding something, or he's embarrassed or ashamed about something?
In 1984, nothing happened. Yeah, in 1985, nothing happened.
That's an interesting theory that maybe he's got something to hide about those years.
Yeah, we just need to know the 84 to 87 years, don't we? Mm.
Or was he just being lazy, didn't really have anything to write, wanted to sit on?
Are you saying him or are you saying the writers? That's the joke.
Yeah. It also shows that he doesn't know how to pace a book, in that basically this point he's got 3 whole years where he's got nothing to say. Later in the book he's going off on 5-page tangents about Nando's ordering systems and so
that's
on.
Key information.
It is important. Yes, you kind of go from nothing happening to, Alan writes, "How had I gone from the caustic glamour of Our Price Radio to the snarling balls out toughness of sports reporting?"
Balls out. Glamour of Our Price Radio.
Cosseted glamour.
And he kind of develops as a sports reporter for local radio. And then he gets what ultimately proves to kind of be his big break, really. He's commentating on some archery. When a female steward is badly hurt at the archery competition, she gets an arrow into the arm. And there's a whole section, I'm not going to read it verbatim, I mean, really do listen to the audiobook because it's so good. About he basically reels off a fantastic bit of
giving a live commentary on this woman being injured steward.
Exactly. And actually, when you listen to it in the audiobook, it's actually quite a good bit of commentating. He doesn't doesn't pause for breath. He doesn't get fazed by it. He kind of nails it, really.
It's believable that it could be his big break, isn't
exactly,
it? When he
yeah.
describes her as a human kebab, or if you prefer, some kind of lady lolly.
And arguably, that actually kind of makes sense that Alan broke through in this world because it's the one thing he's good at. Then everything else he's tried above and beyond that, he's basically reaching beyond, above his station.
If he'd stayed at this level, apart from not understanding sport very well, he'd have been fine.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. I guess as you get further into On the Hour of the Day today, he clearly knows nothing about any sport.
There's a couple of bits from the commentary which are actually really good. He says, the St. John's ambulance are nearby, not doing anything, of course, but I'm sure they're trained to administer medical care. And then he says, the arrow's out, it's out, it's been plucked from a woman like a pointy Excalibur. Well done, that man. Right, next to shoot is Mark Allen. So he doesn't even pause. He just goes straight back in. So that kind of, I mean, in the 90s, you didn't really necessarily have things going viral as you do now. But like that broadcast kind of put him on the map a little bit. And he actually became a bit of a, as in his own words, hot property.
That said, he's presented this very much as his big break. But I've just spotted the final paragraph says, and so it was that 6 months later, I was included on a round robin circular memo to BBC reporters.
Look, it doesn't matter about the time frame. This is his big break.
Oh, see, but hang on. Oh, another key point here. We've called it his big break. 6 months later, he was included on a round robin circular memo to BBC reporters. So he wasn't headhunted. He was just CC'd on an email.
Yeah, he was a wanted man.
But brings us to chapter 7, joining the BBC.
Over to you, Tom, to give us an update on the track listings.
Your mandatory listening for this chapter are the songs Salisbury Hill by Peter Gabriel and Tusk by Fleetwood Mac.
Actually, two very good songs.
Yeah, it's great choices.
So Alan is working at Radio 4, very much the BBC One of radio, which it kind of is in some respects, to be fair. You can give him that one. Alan feels the need to call all of his colleagues to let them know about his new job, and they stoically display almost no emotion. But I imagine that's purely because they literally couldn't give less of a shit.
I'd imagine half the people he's calling are like, who are you?
Yeah.
He also does that only to then find out that the show he's moving to on the hour is to be a weekly show. So he's actually only needed in London on a Friday.
Yeah. The part I wanted to kind of spend a bit of time on, and wanted it, for those of you that have read the book, where Alan goes on to talk about the audit of his desk. He talks at length about the setup of the desk, the layout, why he's chosen to put things where. And then he also talks about putting a layout sketch in the appendix. But does this happen?
No, there's not a sketch in the appendix.
He said he would put it in the appendix free of charge, but there is no desk layout, which I actually think would have enhanced the book to have to have that included.
There is also what I would imagine is a book-specific gag where he writes about arriving in London to start the show. He writes, on the morning of the show, I'd arrived at London's, brackets, check name of station, and that's how it stays in the book.
Yes.
So I can't remember what they do on the audiobook.
They don't say that.
They probably just cut that line out, I'd imagine.
Yeah. He says at the height of his popularity as well, he was receiving 5 or 6 pieces of fan mail a quarter. which he's obviously very proud of. I'm not sure if that's necessarily anything to be bragging about. But I guess fair to say at this point, he is kind of slowly on the rise. Like he's not kind of on the way back down. He is kind of slowly kind of going up. So that's,
He also says that he thinks... He breezed the interview. Thankfully for me, that's all it took, along with a 90-minute interview, a written exam, a series of psychometric tests, and the submission of a full portfolio of my work. Which reminds me a bit of Tom Dark and I met over a very grueling job interview, where the first step was to build a guitar out of Meccano.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Verbal reasoning tests and
the
all sorts.
The music industry is fine.
It was like being on The X Factor, but nobody was watching. Anyway, I digress.
So Alan talks about the nerves that he felt upon arriving at the BBC and the opening editorial meeting, saying nerves fluttered around his stomach is a hard feeling to describe, but it was almost as if someone had put moths in my tummy. And then later on in the chapter, he get questions tumble around my head like trainers in the washing machine that I've mentioned on 2 previous occasions.
He also talks about a term that I'd never heard, namely T-AIDS, which is when someone puts the spoon back in the bowl, which he likens to someone sharing a needle, which seems like a slight exaggeration, but I can see what he means.
It's a serious business.
You definitely want clean cutlery when you're talking about a cup of tea, right?
So what you're saying is you're on board with it, you just think the extremity of AIDS is the issue.
I would agree, yeah. In principle, I buy into what he's saying.
Tea flu?
That's a bit more reasonable. A bit more acceptable.
And then just the kind of context around that. So that's when he's in the first editorial meeting with the On The Hour team, isn't it? And he's just thinking all about this TH stuff in his head and... And then he just kind of bursts out with it, so nobody has any idea what he's talking about.
He also inadvertently mentions here that Fernando used to have a turtle and he reversed a car over its head. I was so ashamed by my behaviour vis-a-vis T-AIDS that I retreated into my shell like a turtle would if it realised it was about to have a car reverse over its head. Brackets. And for the record, Fernando shouldn't have let it out of its cage in the first place. You're not even supposed to keep turtles in cages.
Yeah. Good point.
In tanks.
Someone else's fault, though, and that's the key point.
Yes, always.
It's someone else's fault.
Did anyone else enjoy Alan's description of the London Tube Network as well?
Please go ahead.
So Alan talks about, obviously, travelling to London and getting to the BBC on the Tube, and he describes it thus. Comprised of a hidden network of mysterious subterranean tunnels, how did they get there? Where did they end? It's at work for 18 hours a day, hurtling busy Londoners around their capital at almost twice the speed of walking. I thought that was quite fun.
Very good.
So that takes us to the end of this chapter, and next up is a mighty big fish for a pond this size. We are coming, as always, to Tom Dark to give us an update on the track listings.
So your required listening for this chapter will be Lovers of Battlefield by Pat Benatar and Amateur Hour by Sparks.
So this opens with a very ear-catching / eye-catching sentence, depending if you listen to the audio before reading. Who are you? I don't bloody know you anymore.
The cracks are starting to appear in the marriage here, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. Carol.
Yeah.
I like his description of the aftermath of this. He eased her out of the way and put the takeaway menus back into the top drawer. It should have been second drawer down, but I wasn't thinking straight.
So, I've got a question here. If you're going back to your parents, say, and you're getting a train back and you stock up on snacks, have you ever done this thing that Alan does here where basically he has a little bit too much to eat and drink and then can't have the dinner when you get home?
Oh, I always have the dinner.
Just double down.
Yeah, I suppose you could always double down. Yeah. I've definitely done that where I've had a little bit too much and mum's gone, oh, I've made a lasagna, and I'm like, oh, I don't really want it. And you feel really guilty. But obviously Alan's not thinking that because he's high on the being at the BBC, isn't he?
And he's had half a bottle of wine. He doesn't remember the colour on the train home, and he's out of control.
He's a self-described monster at this point, which I think is probably something of a slight exaggeration. But to put that into perspective, he was kind of, I guess, growing more into this sort of local celebrity persona that he kind of bestowed upon himself. So, for example, and this is something that throws back to some of the earlier Partridge that we've seen on TV, he is allowed to browse in Tandy on his own in December 93, 94 and 95. To be fair,
at the peak shopping period before Christmas.
I was going to say, like, you can laugh all you like, but Tandy was definitely high street gold at one point.
Would you say Maplin is today's Tandy?
Well, I think it wishes it was. I was going to say, I think it very much is in the shadow of what Tandy was. It's just that, I don't know what happened to Tandy, probably bought out by someone.
If you're just tuned in, you're listening to the Long Retail, 80s retail podcast.
I was just going to say, at this point, where Alan's kind of talking about, being a local celebrity, did anyone have any local celebrities in their town as they were growing up?
Yes, Gus Honeybun.
What?
Gus Honeybun is a sort of West Country TV rabbit that is like like very much the local threadbare Gordon the Gopher of its day. I think I once entered and won a colouring competition set by Gus Honeybun on TVAM or TSW, whatever the local Southwest TV.
I've literally never heard of Gus Honeybun.
Gus Honeybun would come on against like a terrible blue screen of like a rainbow or some shit, and then it would just bounce up and down and read out people's birthdays, and that was pretty much it.
Wow.
If that's a fictional, like, rabbit puppet, I don't think that counts as a real local celebrity, does it?
I mean, if I queued up to meet it, does that not make it a celebrity?
I know, good point.
There you go.
I've just done a Google. There he is.
Yeah.
So look at
lovely looking chap.
He is real. Not a celebrity.
We'll put a picture of Gus Honeybun up on the socials for anyone who wasn't in the West Country in the 80s to enjoy.
The best one that I had was a former world snooker champion, Peter Ebden, lived quite close
to
our school.
Good.
So he'd come to our school and he won the world championship one year, and he brought the trophy, and you were allowed to go and have a little look at the world snooker trophy. Yeah,
producer Jed's favourite band, Muse, came from the town quite near me, Tynmouth, a little seaside town.
Jed loves Muse.
People used to talk about, I think, Ray from the lead singer of the Troggs.
Nearby.
Was it Ray? I can't remember.
I don't know.
I had one of the Birds of a Feather Jed will know.
It was Pauline Quirk.
You've used two words there, Jed, as well.
They open a performing arts school for her in Bristol, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I used to see those adverts on the back of buses.
Yeah. So Alan being a local celebrity, he describes it thusly. In Norwich, I was now a seriously big dog. I was receiving more sexual advances than ever before, many of them from women.
At this point in the book, we get one of many references that flesh out his relationship with Sue Cook. It says, Sue Cook appeared on screen, and in my tipsiness, I began to talk in gushing terms about her. She'd always reminded me of Jeff Archer's wife, Lady Archer. Doesn't know her name. Sophisticated and demure. But having got to know her a little bit, I realised she had a wonderful sense of humour and had a loathing of other presenters that I found quite wonderful.
So that's the real reason why they bonded, isn't it? Yeah. She hates the people he hates.
He paints her as a very caustic person. Although we have chatted to Sue Cook in real life about Alan, and she was more than happy to play along, and actually was very, very nice.
Thanks, Sue. And it's there are several more mentions of Sue Cook in the book from Alan, and he doesn't hold back on his feelings.
No, he does not.
More Cook Watch to come.
Absolutely. Alan's VO work also starts to increase, although unfortunately he takes on some work at a local dog track where the dogs are chasing actual rabbits.
Not Gus Honeybon, I hope.
Maybe that's where he went. He did stop reading out my birthday after a few years.
Nick, we should just explain VO work is, what does that mean?
Voiceover. It's also at this point that he takes on an assistant.
Who might that be?
Well, can we refer to her by name?
No.
I mean, Alan doesn't, so we should probably follow his lead.
Yeah, I mean, the crucial thing from his perspective is that she's affordable over being competent.
I like that he phrases it, to manage my affairs and also because I deserved one, I took on a personal assistant.
Yeah.
He describes her as a local spinster who lived with her mother. And is it safe to assume that her situation essentially never changes throughout the whole Alan timeline?
Well, she's slightly less of a spinster when Gordon's on the scene during I'm Alan Partridge, but I believe that ends badly.
He takes her on in 1992. Is that an inconsistency with her knowing Chris Feather in the 70s?
No, it isn't, because I think he says that she does some occasional work for him before that.
I believe
that's correct.
Well, yeah, and you also have, she works in a very junior capacity at Radio Broadland and Great Yum. So yeah, she's...
Their paths could have crossed.
She's been around.
She's been on the scene.
I think she probably met Chris Feather coming up in the scene.
But yeah, I've kind of got faith that the way they've written this book, that I think they've kind of fact-checked everything to make sure it all ties
I remember
together.
Them saying that they've got a giant comprehensive Alan timeline of where he was at every point in history that they refer to.
God, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
There's also more retail news as Alan talks about Burton's gold card.
I love this.
He is shaking just thinking about.
Has anyone checked if a Burton's gold card did or does exist? Burton's still a going concern.
I'm pretty sure they did. I do remember those kind of retail cards being a thing. So it's a safe bet Burton had them.
There's also a lovely bit towards the end. I might be jumping ahead.
You've jumped ahead.
Go on.
Well, he just proclaims, guys, I've gone gold.
And then lost consciousness.
And with that, I lost consciousness.
Passes out because he's got a Burton's card. Yeah. What does it entitle you to again? Because it doesn't actually, it's not like free
clothes.
I think
it's basically just a store card, probably.
Oh, here we go. The limit was reduced on the Burton Gold store card in 2008. It used to have a £250 limit, but now they've reduced the limit to £100.
Nice. Good Burton's gold card knowledge. So as we've kind of mentioned, he was very much drunk on the ale of celebrity. He recalls a time where he's on a packed train where he was next to a war hero who was missing a limb.
An amputee.
And the train full of people suddenly starts bursting into applause. Now, Alan at this point assumes that they are applauding him.
Well, he's quite irked that the amputee hasn't joined in.
Exactly. And then days later realizes his mistake that actually they were applauding the war hero and not him, but to remedy that situation, he asks his assistant to place a box of chocolates on the cenotaph.
I'm sure that the message has been received. One more quick thing on the Burton's gold card. I've looked up the actual benefits that Alan gets from this. It's a complimentary shoehorn and free alterations on every suit purchased.
Amazing.
More than enough to make you lose consciousness.
And I think for him, that's a real career high. I was going to go back to the amputee incident.
Yeah.
That's actually a really interesting point in the book, because it's the only occasion where Alan seems to really... experience humility, because he actually realizes that something wasn't all about him.
Although
it does take him days to realize.
And he does say, if I could have given my legs to that soldier after being killed in a car accident, perhaps I definitely would have done.
Any other points before we move to the next
chapter? one sly dig at the military services from Alan, presumably because when this book was published, the Iraqi fake photos in the Daily Mirror were still very much part of everyone's mind. He said, "I felt so stupid because without exception, those guys, military personnel out there, whether they're disabling landmines, driving tanks or photographing inmates, are all heroes."
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Super Talk!
Brought to you by Ginster's Pasties.
Hello listeners, Tom Dark here. Just cutting in, because that brings us pretty much to the end of our analysis of Alan's early years. So for those of you that missed it, next up we are going to a game of Partridge Amongst the Pixels that we originally broadcast live on our Facebook page. Why not guess along at home as we pit various Partridge terms against one another for search engine supremacy? We now cross over live, not live, to Adam Brooks of the past. Take it away, Adam.
What we thought we would do around about now is play a game of Partridge Amongst the Pixels. So Partridge Amongst the Pixels, for those who haven't delved into it before, is basically where I take search terms on Google Trends relating to Alan and the world of Partridge, and we pit them against one another to see which worldwide over the last 12 months is the most popular. So I've got, just to run through the rules here, I've got 20. The idea is that you all confer and then give me one solid answer.
So you want a group answer?
I want a group answer, yeah.
And why not play along at home as well? Just very quickly, Claire Owen, hello. She says, hello, hi guys. So hello,
easy
Claire
for you
Owen.
To say.
Yeah, very easy. Greetings, Claire.
Play along at home.
If you do want to play along at home, feel free to comment, especially if you're on Facebook, facebook.com/thepartridgepod. You're already there if you're watching it. Comment underneath and we'll get through any questions or comments as best we can. So there's 20 rounds. We need a confirmed answer from the group. If you get it right, then you will hear this noise.
The famous bell.
The monkey tennis bell. There we go. And then at the end of the round, we'll basically know whether you're good or whether you're a bunch of Dan Andler shits.
I think we know the answer already, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
We are very, very good.
Experts,
remember. We are experts in our field.
As we've been focusing on iPartridge, most of these are iPartridge related.
Okay.
So to start with, number one. On Google Trends, worldwide, last 12 months, I pitched the following companies against one another. Pear Tree versus Apache.
Oh,
both I'd titans go, in Alan's entertainment world.
I'd go Apache, I think.
I think I'd agree. Pear Tree sounds a bit... Well, I don't know. I mean,
also, how does this work? Like, because Pear Tree
was two
be
separate. It was two separate words. Pear, space, tree.
Yeah.
Is how I've
okay, should we go Apache?
Them. Apache.
Yeah.
Saying Apache?
Yeah.
You're correct.
Boom. All right.
It's Apache. Let me mark that down on my score sheet.
One.
Hard to do
massive
with one
piece
hand.
Of paper.
Next up, round two. Two seminal figures in Alan's life, both covered in depth in iPartridge. Pete Gabbitas versus Chris Feather.
Chris Feather.
Chris Feather, yeah, it's got to be.
That's nice and generic.
Yeah, Chris Feather.
Pete Gabbitas is very specific.
Yeah.
He does get a lot of mentions, though.
I'm going Feather.
It's a tricky one because for all we know, there might be someone in Oklahoma called Pete Gabbitas who is an absolute legend.
I reckon there's more people called Feather than there are Gabbitas.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, let's go Feather.
Final answer. Yes. The feather takes it.
Are there any famous other Chris feathers that we should be aware of?
I don't know. I didn't look it up. Don't credit me with any research.
Fine. Yeah.
Okay. Three. It's a Partridge-esque play on words for you here. Hayes or Graces?
Hayes or Graces?
Interesting.
I mean, Graces.
Graces.
Yep.
Yeah.
Graces.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Correct.
Is that three on three?
That's three on three. Well done. Okay. This is a common point brought up when people are talking about iPartridge, the fact that Alan doesn't really refer to his assistant by name. Mm-hmm. But what about Google? Part four, assistant versus Lynn.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Again, I'd go assistant.
Assistant?
It yeah. must be. It must be.
Of course.
We're nailing it.
Then we need to
do a quick refresher on what the rules are? Did we explain at the beginning?
I'm certainly happy to go through.
Maybe just as a quick, at this point, reminder of how you've measured and ranked these.
Yeah, a few people have joined us over the last couple of minutes.
Okay, so basically I looked on Google Trends, which shows you how popular a search term is in comparison to another search term. You can change all kinds of parameters, but I've gone for worldwide popularity over the last 12 months.
Gotcha,
yep.
Some of these, there's quite obviously a favourite in Alan's world, but how does it translate into the real world slash our world?
Yeah.
There's our universe and there's the Alan universe.
Different timelines.
Round five pits two women against one another. It's Carol versus Sonia. Who will emerge victorious?
Could Carol include things like Christmas Carol?
No.
Yeah,
but you've only searched Carol, not Christmas Carol.
Okay, yeah.
So
I would probably
people could Google for a Carol and then it could
Google trend data would just be against Carol.
I still think it's Carol.
It's probably Carol. It's Carol. Yeah. I mean, I think the clue there is probably that Sonia is spelt with a J. So,
we didn't think of that.
Pretty low in the old rankings. Two important concepts that are discussed at length in iPartridge, but have no real relation to one another. Round six, skirmish versus T-AIDS.
Skirmish.
It's got to be skirmish, hasn't it?
Yeah, I've never heard. Yeah, it's got to be skirmish.
It's the quickest round yet. Yeah. Correct, it's skirmish.
I'd imagine T-AIDS is only going to yield results from iPartridge mentions.
Yeah. Mm. Speaking of niche.
We're going to get niche.
Round seven is possibly...
The nicheiest?
The nicheiest, I believe
so
that's
so nichey.
I was searching for the right word, but yes, nicheiest is the right word.
Or niche, if you're American.
Yeah.
Never niche. Hello to our American fans.
Round seven.
Open it.
Versus yes.
It's yes.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah, that's fine.
Well, it was actually a trick round. There is not enough data. I told you it was niche.
We're all winners.
Yeah.
In a way.
Eight. Two radio adversaries / pals of Alan's that we've covered on previous podcasts. Dave Clifton versus Pat Farrell.
Oh, I like it. Dave. I would immediately go Clifton.
I think I would go Clifton as well. He's been in more Partridge-related things, so it's got to be Clifton.
But it's not just Partridge, it's the term Dave Clifton.
Yeah, of course, but I still think the majority of that search term is driven by Partridge.
You've got to factor in how many other Dave Cliftons versus Pat Farrells will be out there.
I'm still going Clifton.
There could be more Pat Farrells.
I think Pat
Farrell's
a more common name. Oh, there's some divide.
Farrell is the bit that makes me think it's more popular than
Clifton. Well, you two think it's Pat Farrell, don't you? So I've got to go with the group consensus.
I'm going to say Pat Farrell. Don't let it come to blows,
okay,
guys.
Okay, let's go
it's
Farrell.
It's really just a bit of fun. You're saying Pat Farrell?
Yeah.
You're right.
Yes! Oh,
well done.
I would have, for the record, I would have gone Dave Clifton as well. Yep. I think Clifton is a more a term that has more meanings outside of just surnames.
Well, okay.
You're wrong.
Clearly.
I'm statistically wrong.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, this is Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. We're just going through Partridge Amongst the Pixels. We pit Partridge terms against each other in terms of which is most popular worldwide on Google Trends.
Quick interruption. Sorry, this is producer Jed. He didn't get a chance to introduce himself.
Oh, yeah, Jed.
The man behind the wizardry that is Monkey Tennis production.
This technically counts as an episode, so you can have one word if you'd like to the people at home.
Burger sauce.
Oh, two again. Two
always burger sauce. Unbelievable.
He's obsessed.
His crusade for burger sauce knows no bounds. Okay, round 10. It's another
we're
two.
We're the halfway point.
The halfway point now.
Yes, yeah, we're the halfway point. In round one, we pitched Pear Tree against Apache, and Apache came out victorious. But what happens when you pitch Meteor Productions versus Blue Barn Media versus Gordale Media?
Oh, it's a triple
it's
threat.
A three-way.
It's a triple threat. I mean,
can we get those options again?
Yes, it's Blue Barn Media, Meteor Productions, and Gordale Media.
I'd go Meteor, I think.
I think the clue is going to be in... Start with, is it productions or media? And then which one of the...
I still think...
But I think productions...
So Blue Barn and Gordale are the media companies and Meteor is productions.
Oh, but I feel like Meteor drags productions back down.
Blue Barn,
maybe? Blue Barn Media?
I'm right, veering towards Blue Barn, Barn based okay, on nothing.
Saying Blue Barn. It's Meteor Productions.
Oh, dear.
Wrong.
God, this has been so exciting. Yeah. I wasn't prepared for this level of excitement.
Everyone agrees. Okay. Yeah, brilliant.
So actually, we're at round 10 now, which is halfway through.
Okay.
Yep.
Let's roll through them.
Yep. It's two celebrity friends of, friends of Alan's. Bill Oddie versus Sue Cook.
Ooh, this
Bill
is Oddie. A big one.
Oddie.
I think I'd go Oddie. Yeah.
Really?
Yep. Ooh.
He tried to get us with the old double bluff, didn't he?
You can tell why I'm such a competent poker player, can't you? Round 11. It's two of Alan's many... There's a lot of systems that Alan conjures up in iPartridge. Mm-hmm. Two of them here. Which of these is more popular in Google Trends worldwide in the last 12 months? Controlled anger release splashing or short burst underwater crying?
Second one.
The second one's got more
underwater
words.
Crying?
Yeah.
I think the second one.
Yep.
You're going for underwater crying?
Yep.
There was or is there not enough data?
There was not enough data. surprise. Okay.
So did we get that right? I think
yes,
we
got that right.
So technically you've only got two wrong so far. 12, last laugh or first broadcast?
Ooh.
Both used across iPartridge.
Last laugh, I think.
I'll go with the group consensus. I would think first broadcast.
Oh, my God, he's throwing a curveball.
Oh.
No, I'll go with the group.
Let's do it. Let's put our heads on the chopping block.
You sure?
Yes.
Needless to say,
you've won. Oh, yes.
Round 13. We need to talk about Alan versus we need to talk about Kevin.
Kevin.
Yeah. I thought that might be trickier than it was.
That was not tricky.
Okay. They've rebadged it, you fool. Round 14. Is it Radio Norwich or North Norfolk Digital?
Radio Norwich.
It's Radio Norwich. Yep. Round 15.
Come on, into the final straight.
Skirmish or Swallow? Beloved TV.
Swallow.
It's
yes.
Swallow.
Yep. Smashing this.
16.
It's almost like we know the source material and what's going to be happening.
Nothing much happened to Alan between these years, but which is bigger, 1984 or 1987?
84, Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
No, that's 89.
Idiot.
Also, George Orwell.
George Orwell.
1984.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. It's very easy to get Taylor Swift and George Orwell mixed up, I think.
Yeah, I find that a lot. Yeah,
especially across a crowded room.
Yeah.
84.
It's 84.
Year of my birth.
the first two terms in the index for iPartridge, but which is more popular? Round 17, ABBA or Al-Qaeda? And when I say popular, I mean in terms of Google search.
Yes. Okay. That is hard.
Okay, I would anticipate a lot of people spelling Al-Qaeda incorrectly, which would skew the search results. Yes. So I would go ABBA.
Good insight.
I like the thought.
I could be wrong.
No. I like the way your mind works.
In terms of like internet coverage over, say, the last 15 years.
We're talking about the last 12 months.
I think... oh, yeah, I know that, but...
Okay. I like the way Tom thinks. So I like the way he thinks as well.
He's played Google at his own game.
I'm still thinking Al-Qaeda, but I'm happy to go with ABBA.
I'm going ABBA.
Okay, it's ABBA.
You're going ABBA?
It's ABBA.
Yes.
18. A battle that played out in real life with fatal consequences. 18. Forbes McAllister versus antique dueling pistols.
Antique dueling pistols.
You'd think, wouldn't you? But no. It's Forbes McAllister.
Oh,
really?
Wow.
Genuinely.
Wow.
Google.
I am genuinely stunned by that.
Coming towards the end now. Round 19.
Thank God.
Throughout iPartridge, Alan is desperate to get a show commissioned with the name Alan's Show. Yes. So which is more popular on Google? Alan's Show versus the phrase, any other name.
any other name.
Yeah, any other name.
Yeah. Any other name?
I'll go with the group, but I'm not sure.
Any other name?
We'll go with the group.
It's any other name.
I'm now sure.
And then finally, just for a bit of fun.
Just 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 a bit of self-indulgent fun. Apologies to everyone at home who was hoping for a final Alan-themed. Tom Stab versus Nick Older versus Tom Dark versus Adam Brooks versus Jed Shepherd, which is most popular on Google Trends.
Brilliant. Jed Shepherd, I think.
I think Jed Shepherd as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Jed is basically a massive one-man media conglomerate.
Or Tom Dark. I think it's Jed Shepherd.
No, it's Jed Shepherd.
I think it's Jed.
Why would it be me?
Because the name is Tom. Yeah, or it could be Tom Stout. No, I don't think it's me.
Okay.
It's not the cooler,
though. I'm going to have to press you for an answer.
Let's go Jed.
I'm going Jed.
Jed.
I mean, he is an international media mogul, but it's Tom Dark.
Hey!
Slightly concerning.
Look at that.
I tried. So that brings us to the end of the
quiz. Not sure if I want to know more about why that.
Let's have a look.
So infamous. I believe the scores on the doors are that you got three wrong across the whole thing. So that's an admirable 17 out of 20.
I would have taken that at the start.
Not bad at all.
Great work.
Hot topic.
And so that draws to a close this phase of iPartridge, the early years. Join us next week when we're going to be picking up with Tom Dark taking the helm as Alan makes the move to TV.
Oh, yeah.
Very exciting. To get in touch with us, it's thepartridgepod@gmail.com, @thepartridgepod on Twitter, monkeytennispod on Instagram, or facebook.com/thepartridgepod. Don't forget to get tickets for our live show, postpoppodcast.com/monkeytennislive. We're going to be at the Prince Charles Cinema on the 22nd of November, and we would love to see you there. That's pretty much it from us. We'll see you next week for Alan's Move to TV. Until then, thanks and goodbye.
Au revoir.
Join us.
Monkey Tennis?
Smelly Alan Partridge.
Linton Travel Tavern seemed an obvious choice.
Monkey Tennis?
At the BBC of all places. Be real.
Monkey Tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey Tennis?
I wish things had turned out differently, but I'm glad they didn't.
Monkey Tennis?
It will be called Alan's Show. I decided and would be absolutely ace.
Monkey Tennis?
But needless to say, I had the last laugh.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.